Hey, how's it going, y'all? Welcome to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show.
I'm him.
It's libertarian foreign policy mostly. I hate it. Foreign policy. So I oppose it here for you. Today on the show, I don't know, looks like, might just be you and me here. Yeah. I got a few invites out. Oh, here's one more I forgot to send. I'm gonna send right now because, yeah, I don't know, do I really care about that? Yeah, I guess I do. Alright. And one more. Radio. Can you do the show today? Yeah, this is the only radio show where the guy talks out loud as he writes his emails inviting people on the show for the day because that's how much preparation he's put into the thing. Can you do the show today at 12:30? Or 1:30 Eastern. All right, so... today on the show, maybe interviews of guests who wrote things. Possibly not. Today after the show, I'm going to interview Charlotte Silver, who wrote the thing for The Nation about the horrible thing that I mentioned to you yesterday. It's just horrible. And so that'll play for you on the show tomorrow, or, you know, maybe I'll go ahead and make that the KPFK show. Although, I don't know, because a lot can happen in a court case. It's a court case. Maybe I ought to put that off and just interview her on Saturday for the show on Sunday. But then again, there's a war on. Should probably just cover the war on the KPFK show on Sunday. Anyway, yeah. Charlotte Silver. That's my one interview that I have lined up for today. It's for after the show. Because she's in the courtroom right now reporting. Okay, so I have a lot of Iraq War 3 stuff to talk about, including Syria stuff, whatever, you know, it's all one big war. I got a lot of that, and I got a lot of stuff about the lawless totalitarian police state, too. So I think first, though, the war. Obama finally to seek war authorization for ISIS conflict, aims to secure authorization before new Congress takes office. It looks like I'm going to lose my bet, maybe, to Gareth Porter. Might not see a full-scale invasion until the spring. I was betting they'd have ground troops there by Thanksgiving, maybe even Halloween. Well, and I mean besides the special forces and the advisors they sent, but I mean troops. And but I got, you know, infantry, Marines, and or, I guess... But anyways, yeah, sooner or later. Obviously, something was going to change after the election. Just had to get that out of the way. So now the president is going to the lame duck Congress to authorize the war. Which I think is, well, it's sort of different at least. I don't know if it's sort of different. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure if any of this matters at all anymore. Maybe the law doesn't even matter at all anymore. But, you know, the theory goes that only the legislature in America can commit the nation state to a war. Not the president. Because he's the one in charge of fighting it, and therefore has every incentive to want to fight one. And supposedly the Congress is closer to the people, and so therefore... more resistant to the idea of getting into a conflict. That's the theory. Separating that power. But anyway, Obama's been bombing Iraq and Syria for months now. And because he knew he was lying, he used every different lie that he could come up with. He said, well, this is authorized by the authorization to attack Al-Qaeda after September 11th. Even though... what that says is those who attacked us and those who harbor them, when you can't even say, well, this is, you know, loyal to Al-Qaeda, but in the Arabian Peninsula, or or in Syria, like al-Nusra or something like that. No, these guys are enemies of al-Qaeda. They're a break-off of al-Qaeda and no longer loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri. So that ain't going to work. And then they said, well, you know, the authorization for the Iraq war, that's good enough. And, you know, by the way, yeah, oh, which, of course, it's not, because that's against Saddam Hussein and his weapons of mass destruction and the Ba'athist nation state that America smashed into a million dead bodies and pieces. So that couldn't possibly be it. And then they cited the War Powers Act, which the popular myth goes that the War Powers Act is the law that Congress passed allowing the president to go ahead and start wars now if he wants for 60 days. No, that's not what it says at all. It's not even an attempt by the Congress to pass authority to the president. It's an attempt by the Congress to remind the president that he does not have the authority to start wars. And they passed it over Richard Nixon's veto. Two-thirds supermajorities in both houses of Congress. To say, if America is attacked, you may respond for 60 days. Assuming it could possibly take that long to get Congress together to vote on the thing, to authorize continuing it. It nowhere says he can start a war. Give me a break. Read the thing. It's, you know, I don't know, 100 words? 75? Including the title? Oh, good. I have a guess there. So I don't know if it matters that they're no longer invoking any of these obvious, ridiculous excuses of legal authority for the president to wage this war. But now they're going to go ahead and get a new authorization to wage war against the Islamic State. And now, so I wonder how they're going to phrase it. Is it going to be against the Islamic State? Or is it going to be against Iraq and Syria? Or authorized activities inside Iraq and Syria, even though really, I mean, I don't know. I guess the official story is that northwestern and western Iraq, they're all just still part of Iraq, just in a state of rebellion, like eastern Syria, that those nation states somehow still exist. They're just in the process of being reincorporated. Because, you know, on the other hand, it sure does seem like they've declared independence in a brand new state. Seem to have unified command over all the land from Raqqa to Mosul and down to the outskirts of Baghdad and virtually all of the Anbar province right up to the airport. So, which is west of town, west of the capital there. Well, who knows? And, you know, I'm sad to say I won't shame her by saying her name, but I saw a former guest on this show who I hadn't heard much from in a long time. And I saw her put out a tweet this morning for a group saying, the new authorization to use military force should be narrowly tailored. Blah, blah, blah. Are you kidding me? The new authorization should be passed? It should just be written your way? That's really the argument. In 2014, that's the best that left-wing activists can do. Please narrowly tailor the new authorization for war. Yeah, that'll hold them. What a tragedy. And of course, especially when all you got to do is read about the war from anybody who knows about the war. You could read about it from right-wing sources. You could read about it from left-wing sources. You could read about it from kind of middle-of-the-road liberals and conservatives and all different publications from Foreign Affairs all the way on down. The consensus is this war isn't going to work. It can't work. Everyone we can ally with is our enemy. And if we did become friends with them and ally with them, it would only backfire. And that the only thing that makes sense is to not do anything. And yet we must do more. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. So I do got Michael Bolden lined up to come on the show. He's from the 10th Amendment Center. Oh, man. I could have swore I'd turned that off before. Hang on one second, y'all. I just got to hit a bunch of the right buttons in the right order here. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the Journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Now, you know, they publish great articles at fff.org every day, but their best stuff goes in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online, and I got a new one coming out in September in there, U.S. Responsible for Somalia's Misery. Support FFF. Sign up for The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. And tell him Scott sent you. All right, I'm back. Interview suggestion, Harry Shearer. I don't know. How am I supposed to get him on? We have a Twitter friend in common, but geez, I don't know. I did see his reenactment of Nixon's resignation speech, which was awesome. Did you guys see that? That was really something else. Anyway, Bolden, he's going to be on the show in the third hour today, and I don't know if anybody else is going to answer me back or not. Mostly I want to talk about how much I hate the cops today, how much you should hate them, but, well, I don't know, man. The war, right? Yeah, the war. Nah, I don't know. No, let's talk about how much I hate the cops. Here's how much I hate the cops, as much as I possibly can. That's how much. All of them. Mother calls police to help her son take his medicine. Oh, yeah, that's what the cops are for, lady. What, did you see that on TV or something? Mother calls police to help her son take his medicine. Cop shows up and shoots him. Cop shows up and kills the guy. He's some, you know, mentally ill in some way. I guess no surprise in Gretna, Florida, but could have been in your home state too. Juanita Donald called the police to come and assist her to get her 24-year-old son to take his medication, as she had done in the past. So on Tuesday morning around 9:30, she called the police to help her with her son, Caldrick Donald. And one officer showed up, Sergeant Charles Brown. He ended up tasing Donald repeatedly and then took him into the isolated bathroom in the family's house and shot him multiple times, killing him. Brown murdered Donald in the presence of his sister and mother, and no one can even say why. He was completely unarmed, of course, and I don't know exactly what was going on with him. The quote from the mother is, "I heard my baby say, 'I want my mama,' after he shot him, and then I didn't hear anything else." Those were his last words. The mother who called the Nazi Gestapo stormtroopers of death to come and help her because, you know, take your medicine. Because that's what the government is. They're like your daddy, and if you have a problem, you call your daddy and he'll come and help you. Because it doesn't matter if you're 40-something and your son is 24, you're still a tiny little child, right? You're a child, and so when you don't get your way, you call your daddy. 911, and 911 sends the German Nazi Gestapo stormtroopers of death to help you get your way. And then if anyone resists them at all, guess what the stormtroopers do? They kill. That's their job. That's why they carry guns, because they are looking for the first chance they get, the first opportunity they can possibly have to take a human life. That's why they become cops. They are all murderers. But instead of, you know, getting a job as an enforcer for a local street gang, which, you know, has a life expectancy of a few months or so, they're smart. They're a smarter cut of psychopathic murderer. And they're the ones who realize that, you know, if I just go and get a job working for the local police department, starting at $80,000 a year, then I'll have a complete immunity and impunity to commit any crime that I wish, to kill any person the first chance that I get. Oh man, a crazy guy. Ooh, he's resisting me. Stop resisting. Takes him in the bathroom, or just so nobody can see and dispute exactly what happened, and then he just shoots him. Kills him. The mother called 911. The mother opened the door to this cop and said, yes, please come in and use force on my son to make him take his pill. And if he resists you, kill him. If he gives you an excuse, shoot him over and over again. And I love the title here. If you follow from libertycrier.com, if you click the link over to the original story, wherever it was. Officer involved shooting. Or maybe it was the video clip. Officer involved shooting. That means an officer killed somebody. They don't ever call it an officer involved shooting if someone kills a cop back. That's not an officer involved shooting. Why, that's an assassination ambush capital murder of our hero. An officer-involved shooting means a cop murdered someone. And the news is on his side. The only time that there's even a discrepancy is when, oops, they kicked in the door and killed the cop, killed the mayor's dog. Or they beat to death a homeless guy on the side of the road, but oops, it turned out it was the sheriff's son. Of course, they were acquitted on that one, but they did go to trial, right? That's the only time a cop gets in trouble, is if the person that he murdered, oops, turns out to be related to a judge or a state legislator, right? Like the story, oh, I didn't talk about this on the show, but I tweeted it the other day. A cop who, in road rage, pulled over this guy at the side of the road at gunpoint. He was off duty. The guy was on his way to church in the morning, the guy and his daughter. And as the witness explained to the local news, he was, I could see all over his face, he was just basically begging. He was just waiting for me or my daughter to move an inch so that he would have the excuse to take our life. And the only reason that this guy is the good guy and the cop is the bad guy is because he's a former state senator and a pillar of the community and everybody knows him and he has all this PR. Oops. Should have picked on a regular nobody. He could have killed him and his daughter and said it was self-defense and gotten away with it. And you know it. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police, state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, Al Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. And they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. And, you know I shouldn't be so hard on this lady. You know, the cops murdered her kid. It's the worst thing ever, but I don't imagine she's listening to the show. The point is, for people to learn the lesson that you are not free, okay? This is not America. This is not the USA. This is the God dang thing in my throat. This is the homeland now. And there is no law that binds the power of the government. And the way that government agents, police, have treated blacks in this country all along from the slave patrols all the way through today is the way that they treat all of us now. There is no accountability. And so they do whatever they want. And they kill white people too, all the time. They kill whoever they want, all the time. And there's no accountability. And you know there's no accountability. Cops do not get prosecuted for committing crimes. They just don't. And if you got two examples, then fine. You've simply proved the rule. That, wow, in two cases, it was such a political thing that they had no choice but to go ahead and fail to get a conviction against a cop who committed a crime. Like, again, in the case of the guy in Southern California, where, on video, they just straight up beat the guy to death for fun as he cried for his daddy. Daddy, they're killing me, help me, he cried, as they murdered him to death for fun. And the only reason it even went to trial at all was because his daddy was the sheriff. Oops, we accidentally beat the sheriff's son to death. Doh. So they were acquitted. Why? Because they're cops. They can murder anyone they want. That's who they are. They're murderers. And yet Americans, full to their eyeballs with TV shows, are led to believe that the purpose of the police is to solve murders? Is that what you think? That their job is solving murders? Well, but I saw Law and Order 700,000 times, and what they said is that these guys are here to solve murders. Yeah, well, that's not true. In fact, they solve less than a quarter of murders nationwide, and they commit half of those, probably. And there's no accountability for them at all. Not in your town and not in my town. It's completely ridiculous. I read a story this morning from the BBC about a girl who was the daughter of a serial killer. And here she writes up the story of what it was like to find out that her father was a serial killer. And it's just a throwaway line in the story that a couple was falsely convicted of the murder of his first victim. It's just a throwaway line in there. It's a setup that once that happened, he started writing his confession in blood on the bathroom walls at the local truck stops, taking credit for the murder. Hey, that was nice of him. But they don't even elaborate. And then that raised reasonable doubt. And so the prosecutor then realized their mistake and petitioned the judge to have the innocent people released, right? Is that how it happened? Does anybody believe that? Or did they fight tooth and nail to keep the innocent couple in prison for a murder they didn't commit? Did they even live? Did they even survive their prison ordeal? Nobody even knows. It's just a throwaway line. Oh, yeah, by the way, when a serial killer murdered this lady, the DA didn't know who did it. So the DA just prosecuted an innocent couple for it. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is something that's always bothered me. I never understood this my whole life. I've heard, and this is before I was even such a lunatic political ideologue, abolitionist type like I am. But even just as a little kid, I used to see stories on Unsolved Mysteries and, you know, America's Most Wanted and these kinds of just whatever regular TV consumption, right? Not like downloading the Free Thought Project directly into my brain all day like it is now, but just kind of run-of-the-mill knowledge from watching TV as a kid. All the time I would see cases where somebody killed a cop. And then they pinned it on an innocent guy. And boy, that's the worst thing you could possibly be accused of doing when it comes to going up against the criminal justice system. Talk about presumed guilty. And yet, of course, in all of these cases, the question always is raised but never answered, and often not raised out loud, but would seem to be, you know, raised in my mind, that, wait, so these cops are willing to let an actual cop killer go free? Who you would think that they would want to just, you know, tear them to pieces, draw and quarter them. But actually, if there's this one N-word in the neighborhood that they really, really don't like and they want to pin it on him instead, then that's exactly what they'll do. Isn't that puzzling to you? Are you like me that you've heard of 100 cases like that in the past? Of people falsely accused of killing a cop? Which means, of course, they don't care who kills you. If somebody murders you, of course they'll pin that murder on whoever they feel like. I mean, obviously, right? They don't care about you. But somebody kills a cop and they're willing to let the innocent, I mean, the guilty go free on that. If they can pin it on the person that they hate the most. Which is, of course, you know, some poor black kid from the neighborhood who they don't like. Maybe he got away with something one time and they're going to show him. I don't have a bunch of examples, you know, specific ones off the top of my head. But again, like I've just heard of these my whole life. People falsely accused and falsely convicted of killing cops. They don't even care about each other. As long as they can do something wrong to someone else, they don't even care to protect each other. Get up there and lie on the stand all day long. And if your mom is having a bad time and calls them for help, they might just kill whoever else happens to be in the house or whatever, who knows. Yeah. Again, at thelibertycrier.com, mother calls police to help her son take his medicine. The cops show up and shoot him. And these are the kind of headlines that you don't see from worse police states. And not because of media, you know, clampdowns, but because there are worse police states that don't commit these kind of crimes against regular people. Most police states are concerned with clamping down on people who are actually opposing them. Not just killing whoever happens to be near your mom when she calls in a panic one night, thinking she's calling for help because all the TV she watched that says that the government is there to help you. I don't know. And here again, and Liberty Crier, I mentioned the Free Thought Project. Liberty Crier also, Trevor Lyman does such a great job of keeping track of these stories. Here's one, and it's got the footage. You don't have to watch it, but it's got the footage of the cops killing this little bitty dog as it runs away from them. They shoot it. They murder this little dog, you know, as revenge against the owner that they didn't like. Here's a cop again at Liberty Crier who breaks the upper arm above the elbow. He breaks the arm of a 14-year-old girl as he's arresting her. This cop. All of these people, of course, at worst get 2 weeks paid vacation. None of them will ever be held accountable for anything at all. And, you know, to round off, I want to skip back to one of these in a second, but from Gawker. Before Liberty Crier could catch up for the second, Gawker has 90-year-old hero busted twice in 1 week for feeding the homeless. He's a 90-year-old man. Earlier, he had two pastors with him a couple of days ago and was arrested for giving food to the homeless in Fort Lauderdale. Good. See, I wanted to get back to the point that you're not free, and the cops are not nice people like Andy Griffith and Law and Order and whatever crap you see on TV that makes it seem like they are here to protect the law-abiding from the bad guys. They are the bad guys. Sorry about your emotions and, oh, but my brother-in-law is a cop. Are you saying my brother-in-law is a bad guy? Yes, I am. You tell me how many bad cops your brother-in-law has ever arrested. That's right, none, ever. How many times has he ever showed up at a scene and went, whoa, Jenkins, you're out of line, you're under arrest. You just committed a felony assault. You just committed a murder. Hey, you just stole money from this drug dealer. You're under arrest for stealing. How many times has your brother-in-law ever done that? Your father, the hero cop, the good cop. Never. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Man, I better turn this thing up. I keep missing my bumper music. got the commercials playing saying, shut up, Horton, you're done. Done. All right, you may be able to hear hammers. The Kook House next door is finally being halfway torn down and repaired there. If you didn't hear, I had the absolute worst case of hoarding in history next door. I'm pretty sure the guy murdered my cat, too. Sick freak. They've now torn the entire house down to the studs. They're replacing the outside walls and everything, tore out the ceiling, all the insulation, everything, tearing all of it down to the 2x4s. Sandblasting it or something. Starting over. For just a few $1,000s more, it would have made sense to just bulldoze the house and build a new one. But anyway, so they're over there working. You may hear nail guns in the background. I'm not sure how bad this mic is going to be at picking that up. I could see the green bars bouncing on the Adobe Audition there. So my apology, especially if you're wearing earphones, it's bothering you. Anyway, so man, I got so much police state news, I can't even keep it all straight. I want to, read a paragraph to you from Tom Englehart here. I got this excellent news story I got from my friend Smiles in the email this morning, a local story. Smiles, if you listen, you got to read the Statesman for me because I ain't gonna. I don't know a thing about what's going on in this town anymore. And I'm from here. And all you foreigners are foreigners. It's my town, but I don't care about local news at all. Except in this case, one of the entrapped idiots is from my town. Austin, Texas. Entrapped idiot Michael Todd Wolf, who is guilty of such criminal stupidity, he ought to go to prison for life for being so stupid. I don't think the terrorism charges really should hold. But, and I don't really care what the law says. There really is no law anyway, as we've been discussing. So I think that Michael Todd Wolf probably is innocent of terrorism and yet is guilty of being so stupid that he ought to be in the Supermax next to Ramzi Youssef and Ted Kaczynski, where he belongs. Hey, idiots, your new best friend in the whole world who's trying to get you to do something terroristy isn't actually your friend. He works for the FBI, stupid. Seriously, who is so stupid? You haven't heard of 100 cases so far where the guy's new best friend was actually an FBI agent, tricking him into thinking he's going to do something so horrible and stupid as to commit an act of treason and go sign up with the Islamic State or try to blow up a Christmas tree lighting in his hometown. These stupid idiots. Each of these entrapped idiots ought to still go to prison for how stupid they are. Letting their brains be hijacked by an FBI informant. You need a friend that bad? You're going to let a cop convince you to commit treason? To go and try to join up with the Islamic State? Then screw you anyway. But my point here is, don't any of you be afraid. Most of the time, I think, it's fair to say, the FBI doesn't actually let the guys go through with it. You know. Mostly. From the Austin American Statesman. Wife. Undercover, quote, friends. Oh, plural this time. Pressured Austin man to join ISIS. From the Austin American Statesman, Dylan Badauer. Badauer? Badauer? The wife of an Austin, Texas man who awaits sentencing on terrorism-related charges. Oh, he's already convicted, huh? Says he was pressured by federal informants into committing to travel to Turkey as a step toward joining a militia in Syria. Well, maybe he was going to join up the moderates. What's wrong with that? Everybody knows the Mujahideen are the good guys over there. Wait, what year did this happen? If it happened in 2011, 12, or 13, then no problem at all, right? First part of 13. Asked if her husband, Michael Todd Wolf, was a member of the so-called Islamic State group, Jordan Furr, his wife of more than two years, told the Austin American Statesman in her first interview, no, laughingly, no, he doesn't know anybody over there. Nevertheless, the 23-year-old Wolf accepted a plea agreement and now faces up to 15 years in prison, part of a growing number of Americans arrested on terrorism-related charges. Get to the point. Fur account of the informant who spent months visiting the couple put all that out there. My husband never came to him with any idea on how to do anything. It was like this guy, you know, everything was his plan, everything was his idea, his master plan. My husband was just his pawn. Fur, 22, said Wolf admitted to wanting to join the Islamic State, which has wreaked havoc in Syria and Iraq, because the FBI insinuated the government could otherwise take their two children and prosecute his family. Yeah, that's just like in Radley Baco. See what I'm saying about how they've always treated black people in America is how they treat everybody now. Radley Baco talked about how this is just absolutely run-of-the-mill, standard operating procedure in all kinds of cases in St. Louis. This is how they operate. You know, rat on your brother, rat on your husband, rat on your cousin, rat on your father, or we'll take your kids. That's the U.S. government. That's liberty and justice for all in the homeland right now. Do what we say or we will kidnap your children. That is standard operating procedure. Has nothing to do with protecting them from abuse. Has everything to do with the government getting their way and no law binding their power in any way. They can do anything they want. Anything. Ask Robert Perry and John Yoo. They'll tell you the Constitution says the government can do anything. And there's nothing you can do to stop them. That's the law. So, they told this guy, we're going to take your children away. Plead guilty. So he pleaded guilty. What would you do? You're going to prison anyway, pal. But now the question is whether your wife is going to be able to keep your kids. Tell me where to sign. That's called the rule of law in America. But you know what? You let it be this way, all of you with your government-loving selves. None of you are as anarchist as me, and so all of you are guilty for giving your consent to this state. You are, to some degree. Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe a lot of y'all listening are just as anarchist as I am, actually. But the whole American people, they do give their consent to be governed by this state. They do. They love it. They love it. They do nothing but call 911 on each other all day long. And so this is what you get. Oh, I'm afraid. Please, take total power and have your way with me and everyone else. Well, this is what you get. You get the government sending someone to infiltrate your loved one, to trick them into agreeing to doing something wrong, and then threatening to kidnap your children if he doesn't go ahead and plead guilty to participating in the government's conspiracy. That's called the rule of law. That's called be a good patriot and worship the police. They're the very best of us. They're our heroes, all of them, no matter what they do to anyone, no matter who they kill, no matter who they extort, no matter what perjury they perjure. Heroes. Love them, worship them. Go and kick down $12 to watch every new cop movie that comes out. To watch every new cop show. Oh, good, a new cop comedy is just starting on Fox. A new cop comedy after The Simpsons this Sunday. About how cops are humans. They're decent humans, just like you. They're not murderers. They're not the lawless terrorist enemies of America. Rampaging through your town, ripping the fabric of your society apart? No, they're the last thing holding us together. Because after all, wouldn't you go and commit wanton crimes all day against your fellow man if it wasn't for the cops stopping you? Anyway, there you go. They entrapped him, and then they threatened to steal his children from even his wife. To kidnap his children. If he wouldn't plead guilty, so he pleaded guilty, and that's it. And you know what? You read Trevor Aronson's book, everybody. It's called The Terror Factory. And what's The Terror Factory? I know what you're saying. The CIA! No, no, no. The FBI. The FBI, they just make this S up all day long. In your town, right now, there is a group of FBI agents working together to recruit an informant, to recruit some idiot into saying he loves Osama into a microphone. Say you love Osama. I'll give you $50,000. Say you love Osama. Say you love Osama. Blam! 50 years in prison for you. And a medal and a bonus for me. There's a whole book on it by Trevor Aronson called The Terror Factory. You know, the liars, the lawless police state, secret police in America, the FBI. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. I never do remember, but this time I'm going to try. So after the show today, I'll be interviewing Charlotte Silver about the case of Rasmia Oda. Oda? Very important. You'll be hearing it soon. Later on in the show today, we'll have Michael Bolden from the 10th Amendment Center, so stay tuned for that. That's coming up in just a little while. So now I want to talk about this here a little bit. All this complaining about the cops and the totalitarian police state and all that. I wanted to point y'all toward... Jesus, what happened to this article? Here it is. I wanted to point y'all toward this thing. Of course, you've all heard of the Milgram experiments, right? Where people believe that they are electrocuting someone for failing a memory test. But really, the test is to see just how badly they'll torture somebody because somebody else tells them to. And the answer is, holy crap, people will go to incredible lengths to please complete strangers with no legitimate power over them at all. They will torture people to death. And Milgram did the study a million times and whatever. But anyway, so here this article is at Aeon. That's A-E-O-N. And it's called The Psychology of Torture. The Milgram experiments showed that anyone could be capable of torture when obeying an authority. Are they still valid? And it's a really long thing. And I guess I probably should have taken notes on all the things that I thought were most notable about it. But I guess... Well, one of the things, of course, and this is not original, but it's been brought up, is that Milgram himself, of course, was torturing people. Milgram was acting just as a torturer in his own experiment. What kind of trauma was he willing to put these people through in making, at least some of them believed, murders out of them? And he didn't even tell them when the experiment was over that, like, oh, I was just messing with you. You didn't hurt him. He didn't tell them. And so you had, like, little old ladies... who, under what they perceived as such pressure, tortures somebody they think to death. And then he said, okay, bye, have a nice day. And then they lived like that. And many of them, you know, it amounted to a terrible trauma in their lives, what they had been, quote unquote, made to do. And so that was what he was willing to do to them in his own damn experiment, of course. But that's kind of beside the point. The real point is, as he puts it, and I should try to page down and find the exact quote from Milgram here. He says, I would say, on the basis of having observed 1,000 people in the experiment and having my own intuition shaped and informed by these experiments, that if a system of death camps were set up in the United States of the sort we had seen in Nazi Germany, one would be able to find sufficient personnel for these camps in any medium-sized American town. There you go. He actually started out, wanting to find out what's the difference between Germans and everybody else that would make them do this. And he was actually born in America to Czech Jews, and you know, was kind of obsessed in his life with the twist of fate that had him safe in America instead of annihilated in the Holocaust like all the rest of the Czech Jews. And so he was so caught up in what had happened there and trying to figure out how it happened. And then he turned out, he realized that actually, well, as he's putting it here, the government could hire 5% of your neighborhood to enslave the other 95% to turn your neighborhood into a death camp. They'll do it. They'll be happy to do it. And if it comes down to it, they'll be given a choice like, hey, you want to be in the death camp? All right, then. But it won't even have to come to that. Won't even have to come to that. That's how easy it is. And it reminds me of this Bruce Fein article. He's been writing a lot lately for the Washington Times. He's the guy who wrote the articles of impeachment against Bill Clinton. Obstruction of justice is a felony, you know, if you commit it. But anyway, so Bruce Fein, he wrote this thing, and I like his attitude. You can tell he's upset. And he wrote a thing, and he basically is saying, you know, like I always, or not always say, but sometimes say, humans are either fallen or we're monkeys, but either way, we're far from perfectible in any sense, right? And so Fein is a little more critical. Fein says, humans are beasts. They're evil, murderer, torturer beasts. That's what they are. You and me, men, that's what we are. The only thing, well, and not all day, every day, but he's saying, especially with those who lust for power and those who lust to obey power, that these dynamics are just part of humanity. And the only way to check them is through a system of law built on a moral philosophy by men who take the time out to come up with one and try to come up with a system of law based on it instead of just the Maoist principle of power and the barrel of a gun. And, of course, you know, Bruce Fein's point is he's despairing that nobody has the morality or the moral philosophy anymore to even care if there's a law anymore. We're giving it all away. The fabric of our civilization is being pulled right out from under us, and we're being left with absolute power and no longer even custom and tradition to restrain it. The Bill of Rights, what's that? You name me any part of any one of the first 10 amendments, and I'll show you how they're violating it with impunity right now. You could show me. And so that's the thing. What's preventing them then? If Milgram is right, and he is, that Americans are all a bunch of Nazis just waiting for the right pair of fingers to be snapped in their direction to make them obey and begin carrying out the worst of war crimes, then what's to be done? Well, Fein says we need a constitution. Now, I'm not really for that. I think we need to not have a monopoly on government at all. But at least I would argue, you know, not for going back, because there's no such thing as that. But I would argue for, you know, repealing all federal everything and the Bill of Rights last. Unless, you know, I Dream of Jeannie can get rid of all of it in one fell swoop. There are, you know, Article 1, Section 9, Amendments 1 through 10 and, you know, 13 and a couple others. These are the last things that we want abolished about this state, if it's got to go in order. And we're giving it all up. And we're living in a system where, well, it's already a de facto lawless dictatorship. But it's not de jure, right? We don't have a Hitler in power saying, I am the supreme judge of the American people, blah, 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 right? You don't have that. Not yet. You don't have, you know, complete lawlessness, declared lawlessness yet. But what do we have to restrain that? Other than after a few years, we get sick and tired of our politicians. But I will note that, boy, does it take a few years. People just love George Bush until finally Katrina drowned, and he did nothing for a full week. He did nothing. And everyone went, whoa, man, I'm sorry. But this is not like murdering a million Iraqis. This is murdering thousands of Americans and not caring, just sitting back laughing as they drown. What is this? It's taken Obama. Just think of all the hype of Obama. Boy, it was the George Bush personality cult times 10. All the hope and change supposedly represented by this guy. And it's taken this long for the consensus to finally be, nah, I guess not. But we're giving it up when we don't insist on the limits on their power. It's almost too late. Maybe it is too late already. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement, featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more. The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty, and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. All right, y'all, welcome back. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Michael Bolton's coming on in just a few minutes to talk about some things with us. I'm going to get back to the wars here. Prothero and Lande have a piece saying that the Iraqi army and Shiite militias are prepared to try to take back the rest of the Baiji, is that how you say it? B-A-I-J-I, the Baiji refinery. And now they've held the actual center and important buildings there at that refinery this whole time. So at different times, there's been different amounts of control by the Islamic State fighters versus the Iraqi government forces there on the periphery, leaving the whole thing offline. But they've at no point have they lost the entire thing to the Islamic State, although the Islamic State clearly wants it bad. Well, according to Prothero and Lande here, they're preparing to hit back there and to try to drive out the Islamic State entirely and solidify their control over the refinery. And they've been building up their forces in the adjacent town recently. So I guess this is really the first thing that we've heard, right, of any kind of, any sort of momentum on the part of the Shiite Iraqi forces. Now, I guess they did drive the Islamic State out of that one small town. It's mostly, the next story here. It's mostly the Iranians doing it. Key Iran general Hezbollah, the driving force behind Iraq's war on ISIS. General Soleimani seen mustering counteroffensive. And, you know, it's funny. I think it's the Wall Street Journal that's treating this like a news story. No, wait. Was it the Journal? Who was it treating this like a thing? Maybe it was the Associated Press was treating this like a brand new thing. Well, no. Soleimani has been in Iraq since June, right? I mean, maybe he went home for a minute. But he's been there all along, and he's calling the shots. Because, after all, the Badr Brigade and all the different break-off groups of the Mahdi army, and I'm not exactly sure what Sadr's relationship is with him, but I'm sure he's probably getting along okay with Sadr and the Mahdi army as well. But the Asaib al-Haq and the Badr Corps, of course, are at his beck and call. And the Iraqi army is really nothing but the Badr Corps itself. And so, there you go. It's just another Shiite militia. That's what it is, wearing American uniforms. And the leader of the Quds Force, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, is that the same thing? I think that's the same thing. Iranian Special Forces, he comes in to lead the fight on the ground. So that's who America is serving in Iraq. Remember the puzzle of David Frum wrote something anti-war. Well, it was only a mystery for one moment till you get past the title. And then you see his problem is, if we fight the Islamic State, we help Iran. And we help Assad in Syria, Iran's friend. And so, because David Frum is a traitor to America, he prefers the Islamic State. He prefers the bin Ladenite terrorists to the Iranians because his loyalty is to Israel first. Don't act so surprised. And that's what's behind a lot of the frustration you see in the foreign policy. You know, I talk about how everybody from the Council on Foreign Relations to the left, to the right, the center right, the center left, and obviously all the libertarians, everyone agrees this whole plan is a mess. We're getting into a war on the consensus that this plan is a mess. But what accounts for so many people agreeing with that? It's because they have their vested interests in who exactly they want to be bombed more than others. And that includes a big part of the war party would rather see these still to this day. After the declaration of the caliphate, they would still, like David Frum, would rather see the Islamic State ruling Sunnistan than see any effort by the Americans to help the Iranians and the Syrians to fight them. Now, myself, I'm against helping the Iranians and the Syrians fight them, too. It was back in the Iranian and the Syrian forces in Iraq this whole time, including Hezbollah and the Quds Force and all that, that drove the Islamic State first into the arms of Al-Qaeda, I mean, the residents of Sunnistan, first into the arms of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and then into the arms of the Islamic State. At the same time, while in the meantime there, Obama actually backed the Sunni-based insurgency in Syria, which included Al-Qaeda in Iraq and then eventually the break-off, the Islamic State, to let it get to this point. But certainly, backing the Quds Force only makes... Think of this from the point of view of their shtick. Their shtick is, hey, look, it's the Israelis and the American Crusaders and the apostate Shiite Ayatollahs from Iran who are against us. Obviously, we're doing what Allah wants. That's their entire shtick right there. Would Allah have us resist the apostate heretic Shiites and the Americans and the Jewish Israelis? Why, yes, he would, they conclude. That's the entirety of their message. Join us. We're doing the right thing. And it sounds plausible compared to the scenario the Americans are drawing up here, right? The Americans are not saying, you know what? George Bush was always wrong to back the Iranian-backed militias and put them in power in Baghdad, and there's nothing we can do about that now, but we'll be damned if we're going to help them anymore when this is half their fault, the other half being George Bush's for putting them in power. But so now we're not going to help them. Screw them and screw the Iranian Quds Force. We don't want to make David Frum angry, and we don't want to make, screw David Frum, we don't want to make the Sunnis of the Sunni part of former Iraq, new independent Sunnistan, we don't want to make them think that ISIS is right about us. We want to ally directly with them, if anything, and I'm not for anything, but I'm just saying at least this would make sense. Hey, you have been taken over and conquered. It's not the Shiites who've been taken over and conquered or the Kurds. It's the Sunnis of Iraq who've been taken over and conquered by the Islamic State. Is that how they want it? To be ruled by a bunch of Chechens and Egyptians and Libyans, telling them they can't smoke cigarettes and telling them who their daughter can marry and what they're allowed to, do with their business and whatever, regulating them like Democrats in their, you know, tiniest little facets of their lives? You want to kill the Islamic State? We'll give you an AK. That at least would make sense. Instead, no, America sides with the Ayatollah. On one hand, they're threatening to bomb Iran. They're lying about Iran's nuclear program. They're picking a fight with Assad and backing the Mujahideen against Assad because they hate Iran so much. And then they turn right around and back Iran in Iraq again, which is what made it this way in the first place. And did I already say this the other day, but let me mention it again? 6,700 people killed in Iraq last month. 7,000 people killed. As the war is back on full blast. Oh, and we're out of time for me to cover that there are Libyans and jihadists in Sinai declaring their loyalty to the Islamic State as well. Although I think they suffered a setback in Libya after doing so. Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all, welcome back. Now it's time to talk to Michael Bolden from the 10th Amendment Center. That's 10thamendmentcenter.com. Welcome back to the show. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm pretty awesome, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Very happy to have you back on the show. I like this project. I like the 10th Amendment best out of the amendments. Strict constructionist, me. But so, yeah, let's talk about the elections. Now, I don't care about Republicans and Democrats, and I know you don't. I don't care about red and blue, and I know you don't. But I do care about, well, same thing as you, the decentralization of power and, you know, the benefits to liberty for the people of this country. And so it seems like, according to y'all's press release you put out here from the 10th Amendment Center, you've got some good news for me. From the election, which must not have anything to do with John McCain being the new head of the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. That's horrible news. I mean, and
I know Giraldi reminded me of that yesterday. I thought, oh no.
Yeah, things couldn't get worse than having McCain in charge of anything, especially there. But we don't focus any of our energy on the federal level because we realize that it doesn't matter if Republicans win, because in a few years, people are going to be clamoring for Democrats because how bad the Republicans are. And then a few years later, they're going to clamor for the Republicans again because the Democrats are so awful. And I'm sure we're exactly the same in thinking on that. But yes, there were some positive things that happened on the state level on Tuesday. And I think if people start putting more of their attention closer to where it should be, which is if we're talking about the advancement of liberty, that's towards the individual. The closer you get your activism towards the individual, the more success you can have. If you spend all of your time, your energy, your money, and your work, and your activism on federal level stuff, I can guarantee you are going to fail if you want to advance liberty. So that's why we're excited about a few of these ballot measures that actually passed. I think one of the big ones, at least in my book, I think is Measure 91 in Oregon. The fact that they are now, well, along with Alaska, third and fourth states to fully defy Washington, D.C. on the issue of marijuana prohibition. I think this is huge and it's instructive. Because if you look at a city like Denver, Colorado, where they that state legalized 2 years ago, there are now 400 stores in operation in flat-out defiance of federal law. Congress says it's illegal. The executive branch says it's illegal. All the federal agencies say it's illegal. The IRS is trying to get involved to try to shut this down. But still, when you open the door and you allow the market to grow, and yes, I intended that pun, that shows that the market is going to overpower the strength of even governments. And while the end result for liberty isn't the idea of, okay, let's tax and regulate, that isn't pure freedom, obviously, but this is a very strong step forward, and it's up to people who believe in more liberty to educate and activate for something better moving forward. But the door is certainly open. And what I like about, not to just keep rambling on this, what I really like about Oregon's Measure 91 is it was a twofer. Not only did they just legalize marijuana for recreational purposes, but they also are authorizing the growth, production, and commerce of industrial hemp. And this is a product that is used in everything from clothing to paper goods, to oils, food products. I mean, I can go to a Whole Foods and pick up tons of foods made with hemp. But unfortunately, this hemp is forced to be imported. It's more expensive because it has to be imported. And that's positive news all around.
Yeah. Well, certainly a big part of what's so important about it is just proving that it's okay. Look, you can do it. I mean, I got to say, I'm amazed. I don't keep up with this kind of thing. And so I didn't even realize that it was on so many ballots. And I'll note that where it lost in Florida, I read they had to get 60% to pass it in Florida. They had 58, but yeah, that wasn't good enough.
I mean, Florida is a place where you wouldn't expect something like this to have positive results. But yeah, 58% is huge. The interesting part, just a side note, a state constitutional amendment was passed in Florida a few years ago that got like 51%. That now requires everything to get 60%. So the whole idea of this whole voting thing is very convoluted and messy, but sometimes things do end up with very positive results. And a few things happen in Arizona, I think, that are just as positive, if not even better.
Sure. Do tell about Arizona then.
So Arizona, there's two. The less big one was Proposition 303. This is a new state statute approved by the vote of 78% to 22%, where they are, in essence, nullifying some FDA restrictions. They are going to allow, and they're basically taking a page out of the medical marijuana playbooks, what happened here in California back in the mid-90s, saying, you know what, there are some people who are extremely ill, and they want to use certain products or medicines, but the FDA does not allow it. They're called experimental medicines. So this was called the right to try ballot measure that now Arizona is basically saying, even if the FDA doesn't approve it, in our state, if you fit certain, and I don't know exactly what the parameters are, I'm sure it's very limited, but they are opening the door, it's foot in the door saying, you know what, even though the FDA is not allowing it, we're going to allow it within our state. And I think that's very positive.
Oh, man, that is so huge. I had not heard about that at all. But first of all, that is such an important issue for, you know, for all people of all ages and all different descriptions all across this country. The crime of the FDA, some of the stuff I've read about that and the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people killed by their neglect and, you know, the way that they run that system. It's an absolute nightmare. Beyond what I think people could imagine, it's a nightmare, the FDA system there. And so, one, that is huge just on the face of it, that people in Arizona are going to you know, have that route around. And I do hope that, you know, medical companies are going to start picking up and moving there, making sure, doing whatever they can to make sure that that can happen for people. But also the other thing is, boy, does that prove how much the people of this country do not love this government, do not believe any longer that, well, geez, if there's a problem with quack medicine, probably what we should do is centralize all decision making in Washington, D.C. and let them worry about it. We don't believe in that anymore. And here's the other wrinkle there, too, is the old people lobbies. I mean, it must have been the, you know, I don't know if it was the AARP or what all lobbies were in on this in Arizona, but there are other states in the union where you have huge percentages of senior citizens who are very democratically engaged and have a tremendous interest in seeing the liberalizing of laws like this. So I think this could, you know, really herald a movement probably if it gets publicized enough.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, that one passed. The vote was 78% to 22%. I mean,
wow.
It was just an absolute crush. And I do believe, and I'm not 100% certain, but I believe that two other states have already passed similar legislatively passed statutes along this line, Colorado and Louisiana. I don't know if they're effectuating it or what, but the way I look at it, and living here in California, I watched it happen. This is basically how the medical marijuana movement started. It was very limited. They passed it. They said, oh, you can't do this. Oh, it's just ceremonial. It's a nice symbolism. But eventually some business person decided, you know what? Now that they passed this thing, I'm going to open up a store. And when that store opens up, the market comes to it. It creates money. It encourages people to do the same. And then another store opens. So I do hope that this will follow that same path. It does remain to be seen how things are going to go, though.
Yeah. Well, and of course, the feds have so much influence over the companies that they'll have to stay in line one way or the other. But then again, there are a lot of new biomed companies around. It's not such a stagnant industry. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know the industry all that well. What I do know is that the FDA is evil. And where I actually learned a lot of what you're talking about is reading old articles at harrybrown.org. Harry wrote a lot of stuff about the FDA and how the FDA kills. So I'm sure a lot of that stuff is still archived.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. for some reason, I'm thinking what I read was that independent.org. And then, but also reinforced this with talking with Anthony Gregory about this, about where, yeah, it could be in the millions and millions of people killed by the FDA, more than even killed by the Pentagon. Hang tight. We'll be right back with Michael Bolden from the 10th Amendment Center, 10thAmendmentCenter.com, in just a sec.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
Hey, I'll Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at wholefoodcomplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at wholefoodcomplete.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show.
I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm at scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feeds there, a whole show or interview only feeds there. Join up the chat room, scotthorton.org/chat. Follow me on Twitter, @ScottHortonShow, et cetera, things like that. Use your Google, you can find me. I'm talking with Michael Bolden. He is at the 10th Amendment Center, 10thAmendmentCenter.com. And the headline is States Flex Muscles, and more like people of states through direct ballot initiatives. Flex Muscles assert sovereignty in midterm elections. Again, 10thAmendmentCenter.com. And now we're talking about Arizona, and you're telling me that they approved this thing telling the FDA to go to hell. They can try experimental medicines if they want to, that kind of thing. But now, according to your press release here, there's a lot more to it than that. Was it it's an entirely separate thing? Or
yeah, there was,
same thing that just says, actually, well, what does it say, this Prop 122?
It's a whole separate one. It's a state constitutional amendment. So it's part of the state constitutional now, where they put together a mechanism for the people of the state of Arizona to, in essence, reject any federal participation and enforcement of federal acts within the state of Arizona. So they're basically taking this idea that comes all the way back to James Madison, who said, you know, when the federal government does stuff you don't want it to do, whether it's unconstitutional or just bad policy, the number one thing that he recommended was the word repugnance. And in the definition of the time, that meant disobedience. A refusal to cooperate with officers of the union was the exact quote from James Madison. And now in the Arizona state constitution, they now have a mechanism for basically a federal policy review to say, you know what, this can be initiated by a vote of the people through ballot measure, through state legislation. We're going to pick and choose federal acts and say, now we're not going to put any resources towards it. And this is a very powerful thing, because most federal programs, most federal regulatory schemes rely extremely heavily, I mean, that's just so heavily, on resources on a state level enforcement. So when there's a federal gun measure, for example, that's enforced, it may be like one or two federal ATF agents that go out on a federal raid, but 10 local police that are basically carrying all the water. The same goes for marijuana dispensary raids. There may be one or two federal DEA agents, but it's the local people that actually do all the hard work. And if a state now that they have this mechanism in Arizona, and it's very obvious, and it passed, it was a close vote, but it passed, now they can actually go ahead and turn around and start using it on stuff. That remains to be seen. I know the people who funded it. One of the main guy who put up his personal money and mortgaged his house, Jack Biltis, he's a member of our organization here at the 10th Amendment Center. And he's told me that, you know, this isn't just some grandstanding thing. He has plans. I don't know exactly sure what he's going to work on first, but he's like, Michael, this thing passes, we are going to use it immediately. And so hopefully we'll see that happen starting
now.
In January.
So how broadly is it written? It allows for new referenda, but what about the state legislature if there's something that they want to go ahead and side with the people versus the feds on something?
Certainly. And it just creates, but the thing is, you can't really trust politicians, and states could do this all the time. They could, in essence, just pass a bill saying we're not going to participate.
Right.
But politicians tend to be pretty weak-kneed, and they don't like doing stuff unless they're really pushed to do it.
But well, and this is declaring a doctrine that, yeah, you're damn right, and we're going to keep doing things like this if we want, and we know
yes.
You object, but we object. So how do you like that?
Yeah, and it's part of the state constitution now, too. So it's a pretty big deal, and it makes it pretty out in the forefront. And I do like the idea that they have also turned it into can be initiated by the people. It was set, so they've already had individual or grassroots initiated ballot measures, but this lowered the threshold, so it no longer has to be funded just by rich people or people who probably benefit a lot from the power of the state, but it can be more of a grassroots project. It's a much lower threshold to get it done.
Man, yeah, that's a huge one. And now, can you talk to me a little bit about California? I read that they made virtually all drug possession misdemeanor offenses at worst now.
I actually just saw the headline this morning over at libertycrier.com, but I don't actually know the details on it. What I do know is if that really is the case, that is massive. Again, we're talking about the partnership between state and federal. Well, the federal government doesn't want anybody to do anything that they make their own choice. That's the way I look at it.
Right.
And most of the states are like that, too. But when you see something positive like this, if California really is going to stop doing this, that means it's not only going to affect and improve policy and liberty in California of all places, but it will also have a strong impact on whether the federal government is going to be able to carry out what they want to do. Another twofer, and I think that is a really positive. I do have to look into details to see how it's really going to play out.
Well, you know, I read a bit about it, and they were, first of all, it wasn't just drug possession. It was also they were raising the dollar amount on for what counts as felony theft. And then I think even retroactively, they're going to go back and review all kinds of nonviolent felonies. But then, you know, drug possession up to pretty major amounts, I think, is still is now a misdemeanor. And they're going to go back and apparently review and start letting people out who are in there on felony possession only charges. From what I read of it, let's see, I'm trying to remember where I read it, which website it was.
Man, that's huge.
It may have been Boing Boing or one of those. Had a pretty good breakdown of it. And, man, Michael, it was severe. It sounded like a real rollback of the police state in California. I mean, not the ability of the cops to do whatever they want to whoever they want.
Right, of
you
course,
understand?
They still have that power, I'm sure.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I didn't mean that. Not all-encompassing, but just penalties on some of these crimes have been greatly relaxed, it looks like.
Well, and I think it's very easy for people who understand what liberty really is. It's the barrel of a gun. I think it's very easy to get bogged down in negativity and pessimism, because everywhere you turn, there's always something. There's always some problem and some bad thing and someone threatening to use violence to force you to do something a certain way. But Rothbard even wrote about this decades ago. He basically said the thing that plagues libertarians is this needless and debilitating pessimism. So I think it's great that you see, like I do, these, even if they're narrow victories, something is positive. What liberty needs to gain a strong foothold is a foot in the door, a crack, a tiny crack, and I believe it can grow. And I think the marijuana movement is really proof of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and you know, another part of this, and it's something that we've talked about before, and it's easy to talk about as libertarians, and we're, you know, we don't have to be married to either side. It's always good to try to, you know, confuse the issue for a run-of-the-mill liberal or conservative nationalist in order to set them straight a little bit. Of course, the liberal nationalist knee-jerk is that, you know, anything quote-unquote states' rights at all or anything perceived like that is really just an excuse to oppress black people or something like that. And then, of course, I know, as you always do, you hit them right back with sanctuary cities and legalized pot and the right to die in Oregon and whatever other kind of left-wing issues, that these are all outright nullification and interposition, and you are for them all, aren't you? And then they go, oh, huh, I guess, yeah, I have to be. And then, of course, for the right wingers, you got to argue gun rights and other issues that, you know, are more along their lines. But I think people just, you know, we all go to government school. Most of us go to government school, and we just kind of learn it from such a young age that all decisions flow from D.C. That's just how it is. So I think, you know, in speaking of these little victories, these narrow victories, it really, they're small proofs that it does not have to be that way, and that we actually can push back from the local level up.
You know what we actually call most of what you just, there's an official phrase for most of that, you know, presenting it in ways that people appreciate. You know, it's called the Horton rule.
Yeah.
It's the out left the left and out right the right. And you've said this stuff for years, and it's very true, and it's actually very effective. We've been able to build really strong campaigns by just, instead of trying to sell everybody on everything all the time, finding out what's important to that person. And we can always present a solution to them that will advance the issues that are important to them.
Yeah. Well, and of course it's easy, and any libertarian can do it, because any libertarian is automatically better than the right and the left on all the things that they are good on. We're even better than them on all those things. So we can always find ways to agree with them and then bring them even further our way.
Absolutely. I recently had a friend who's a pretty staunch, like, old school conservative guy who basically warned me against, you know, working with any Green Party people. But I'll tell you what, sometimes the Green Party folks are the best people that I can find, especially in comparison to the mainstream Republicans and Democrats on issues like spying and war. I don't agree with them on economic issues, but I certainly can create that coalition and work to get something done.
And even sometimes on environmental issues. I met a Green Party guy at a Ron Paul barbecue once who was all about civil lawsuits instead of regulation, much more libertarian take on enforcing restrictions against pollution. So I'm sorry we're out of time. You're great. Your organization is great. 10thAmendmentCenter.com. Michael Bolden, everybody.
Thanks, Scott.